Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. And today's guest is Josh Sprague. I think I've pronounced that correctly, have I, Josh?
Yeah, you got it right, man.
Okay, so Josh, as you can tell, he's not a UK citizen. Josh is from the United States, so we're speaking to him in his morning time. It's afternoon here in the UK. And Josh runs a company called Orange Mud. Now, what particularly interests me about Josh is he's what I call a lifestyle entrepreneur, which means that he's turned his hobby into a business. And in this call, I'm going to ask Josh exactly how he's made life work and be so sweet for him. So, hello, Josh. Thanks for joining us from the United States. How are you today?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for being here. So, Orange Mud, that's a peculiar name for a start off. What made you choose that? Is it something to do with what you found yourself lying in one day during an adventure race?
Maybe. No, you know, my middle name's Clay, and I always thought it was such a cool name. And when I came up with this business idea, I told my wife that we were gonna start a business, and my name was gonna be in it because she wouldn't let me name my new boy Clay, which I fought her to the death on it. But she's like, whatever, dude, knock yourself out. And you know, I spent like hours, like 5 hours, I think, on GoDaddy that night trying to buy a domain name with Clay in it, and Clay just wasn't driving. But as I drank more wine and continued to buy domain names, Clay. I grew up in Kansas originally, and clay back there is everywhere, and there's a lot of mud everywhere, and some of it's reddish orange. And so, yeah, again, as the night went on, Orange Mud really evolved from what started to be something clay. So it's just a good, you know, sticky name, I guess you say.
Okay. So how long ago was this then when you started the company?
January of 2012.
Oh, okay. So you've not been in existence that long then, really? Six years?
Yeah, 6 years. It'll be 6 years actually selling product as of October 27th this year. And so I celebrate kind of like my birthday month of July. I celebrate the whole month. I prefer to have two business anniversaries. There's the when we had the stupid idea and then when the stupid idea actually started.
You're a bit like the queen here in the UK. Then she has her official birthday and then her real birthday.
Heck yeah, might as well.
So, okay, let's rewind then. So before 2012, what were you doing up to that point career-wise? And then what were you doing hobby-wise that turned you onto these adventure racing and outdoor sports products?
Sure, yeah. So prior to Orange Mud, I ran a medical device manufacturing company. And at the time, many years prior to this, about 10 years prior to it, I was doing marathons, adventure racing, mountain bike racing, triathlons. But it was really a triathlon space is where it was actually finishing my last Ironman in St. George, Utah. I was just tired of stashing bottles and hated waste packs and handhelds. And that's kind of when I went out and decided I was going to start this company to make this pack that would mount back behind my head. And just a bottle-based pack, keep it simple, but carry my electrolytes, backup nutrition, and just key essentials. You know, a little bit of money for the beer garden afterwards. And that's what really kicked all this off.
Did you do the full Ironman in St. George? Because I think they only did that there 1 year, didn't they? The course was so hard. I think they had to make it into a 70.3 under protest.
Yeah, so I did the first year. It was actually funny. I swore I wouldn't do an Ironman again. And a buddy of mine, he just thought it was so neat that I'd done one. And he's like, dude, why don't you do an Ironman with me? I was like, I don't know. I prefer dirt. And he's like, come on. So I was like, all right, whatever. Let's do it. And he mentioned St. George. It was a brand new one. And I thought, all right, I traveled there a little bit over the years, more in passing, but I was like, that should be kind of a fun, fast course. It's beautiful up there with a bunch of red rocks and whatnot. So yeah, we signed up for it. There was no information online. Not that it would have mattered much anyway. I'd have done it either way, but But it was like 2 months, a month before the race, we go up to pre-ride and they had just announced the course. And we went up and we, you know, did a pre-ride, a pre-run. We're like, holy crap, this is actually going to be a hard course. And yeah, it was funny. Like during the bike section was hard. There were actually people walking. I don't know if you've ever seen people walking a bike on hills in an Ironman, but I was.
I have. We have some areas in Britain that aren't quite as mountainous as you might get in St. George or in the Rockies, but the hills tend to be shorter and steeper. But I have seen people walking up hills,
No, I couldn't believe it. I mean, there were literally people walking, and it's not like you couldn't ride it. I think people get so nerded out about level two. I can't go above level two. I'm biking past all of them. Like, you guys are idiots walking in your road bike shoes. I don't understand what's going on with this. But yeah, and then even the run had like 5,800 feet of gain in it, if I remember right. And that kicked my butt. Honestly, that was hard. And it was funny. A lot of people were just complaining like, this is stupid. I'll never do this again. This is a stupid course. I'm like, well, it is an Ironman. I mean, it's not like you sign up for a flat course.
Do you know the one of the original Ironman races that was part of the qualification for Kona way back in the 80s? No, actually, the 80s and early 90s is an island off the west coast of Africa called Lanzarote. And I think it celebrated its 25th anniversary just last week. And it's got three or four big hills. It's quite windy as well. And because of the prevailing wind, you happen to be climbing generally into a wind, which makes the hills seem a lot harder than they really are if there was no wind. And it gets hot. And it was voted by Paula Newby-Fraser as the toughest Ironman in the world. And so, you know, there's a lot of athletes that shy away from that because they're not really going to set personal bests there. They're going to struggle on the bike. They're probably going to be an hour or so faster than they would be if they went to Ironman Florida. And it attracts a certain type of person, you know, the person who wants to do the hardest stuff. But I do always find it interesting that when people want to test themselves by doing an Ironman and then they complain that the course is hard, so they want to go and do an easy Ironman in Florida or somewhere.
Yep, it is. It's a weird thing. I can't even explain it about the sport. Like, I guess it'd be neat to go and have a fast race, but I just did the Dirty Kansas 207 mile gravel bike race this weekend, and I had a flawless race, flawless nutrition. It just felt strong the whole thing. Finished the last 30 miles in a crazy 8-man peloton where we flat out hammered, but I finished 20 minutes slower than last year. Last year I bonked for the middle 100 miles, which was a horrible distance to bonk. And you know, it was just a hard race for me. Last year did not go well and I finished quicker, but I am so proud of this year's race because the winds were atrocious. They were in your face. They started in your face and then they switched midday right about the time we began our back 100. And it was a 15 to 30 mile per hour sustained wind. And the roads were hard, you know, just kind of in crappy conditions. We started in some mud. So it's like, yeah, I was bummed. I did basically the same course and I wasn't faster. But at the same time, you have to look at it on how did you feel? And Ironman is one where it's just a sport. Most people get nutrition wrong. It's hard. I believe it's hard to get triathlon nutrition, especially Ironman nutrition, right, because of swim, bike, run. It messes with you more. And I think more people need to look at it as how did you feel? You know, did you come out feeling like you did a better job as opposed to did I just shave a minute off something which is inconsequential given they're all not apples and apples?
So that's an interesting point there. Have you heard of Precision Nutrition?
Yeah, you know, I actually did a podcast with them the other day. Yeah, I haven't tried their product yet, but I love the idea.
Well, Precision Nutrition, I'm not sure if we're talking about the same one. The Precision Nutrition is like a nutrition coaching company based in Canada.
I'm thinking of something else then.
Yeah, they have – the guy is called Dr. John Berardi who runs it. I mean, if you Google them, you'll find that there'll be a lot of practitioners. But I'm just studying their level two course, and it's not about nutrition per se. You know, we're not talking about micronutrients and macronutrients and, you know, biological enzymes within the stomach. We're talking about coaching and how to coach people and how to, you know, how to get inside people's heads and how to set them meaningful goals and that sort of stuff. And it's a lot of what I do as a triathlon coach, but the other day they introduced the idea of, rather than having performance goals, so if I just go back to your cycling there, you had a performance goal would be to go faster than the year before, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that's, yeah, that's some of that's out of your control, like those wins.
Yeah.
So instead of having that goal, have a goal of mastery of the race. So if you master your training and you enjoy the journey and you get to race day in great condition, and then you have a race where everything goes right, and you've mentioned that, you know, you felt great all the way through. It sounds like whilst you had headwinds, they didn't really bother you because you were on top of your game. You were feeling strong in the last 30 miles and you got into that peloton. You've mastered the nutrition. So if there'd been no finishing clock for you to compare against, you'd have got to that line and you'd have been, man, that was the perfect race. I can't do any better than that now. I've achieved mastery there. And for me, that's a way more satisfying to finish an Ironman having mastered every aspect of pre, during and post-race pacing, nutrition and mental than it is just to set a PB where I had a shitty race.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, it's, I always feel better about something that actually went right, because honestly, it's not all that often that they actually do go all right. Oh, so I guess maybe that's why I've never really associated. I mean, don't get me wrong, I always try to be faster than my previous, but it's just so rare that you ever have a flawless day, especially for 17 hours. You know, like it's so exciting. Like, I wish I could say I've had an Ironman or a half Ironman that I've had a flawless nutrition day. That just hasn't happened.
Simon Lessing was one of the top triathletes to come out of the UK, maybe sort of 10 or 15 years ago, he was world champion 4 or 5 times. And he'd raced for, you know, as a professional for 15 years. And he said in that time, he probably had 5 or 6 perfect races. And some of those world championship wins weren't what he called perfect races. The result was perfect, but the execution and the mastery of certain things wasn't. So, you know, I guess the more races you do, the smaller the percentage of days that go absolutely right.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay, so you had this epiphany while you were doing this Ironman about ways for carrying your hydration and all the little bits and pieces that you needed to do in the race. So what did you do then? Do you have a workshop that you go back and you cobbled together this little backpack and decided to see how it would go in races, or did you take some other pathway?
Yeah. I mean, basically it was my garage, but yeah, it was, many years kind of thinking of the concept really, but it was what forced it was in the triathlon side and or triathlon training. But yeah, just one night, just out of frustration, just went into the garage and destroyed a gun holster, a waist pack and some tie down straps and sewed together this crude concoction with a sewing kit that I had from a hotel room somewhere. And went for a little test run, came back and told my wife, it's probably going to cost $50,000, but worst case, we'll have two backpacks worth $25,000 each, perfectly designed for us. And that, we're going to start a business. And it worked. It took a while, but it worked.
you should probably create those celebration 25 grand backpacks. Somebody will buy one.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah, that would be great.
You know, like when McLaren or Ferrari create that one-off Ferrari that's like $2 million, and before it's even gone into production, it's you know, it's sold. Somebody will have it somewhere.
Yeah, we'll plate it in gold.
Well, you could do something. I mean, a backpack might be 25 grand, but you could have something inside it that gives them, you know, VIP access to something, and there's all these little goodies in there. So there's more to it than just the 25 grand. But you could probably make you could probably make a big social media hit out of it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I love it.
So you know, in 6 years, I looked at your website now, you've got an enormous range of products there. So you must have been very busy with your needle and thread and in your garage for the last 6 years, Josh.
We have. Yeah. You know, really it started slow. Cause I, you know, I think like most people that probably make their businesses actually work, I kept my day job because you needed that for cash. And, you know, it takes a while to get a new brand off the ground and to educate people about the why behind the design and why it's going to make, you know, their workouts better. And so I kept my day job for the first basically 3 years and that really helped, but it also slowed me down, which, you know, was probably good because I was still learning so much. There was a huge learning curve jumping into this. But then once we kind of hit this point, I told my wife once we had 14 product or 10 products on the market, I'd quit my day job. But yet it was 14 where I finally I finally did. And the reason why I did 10 is I kind of looked at the math. And I remember looking at our Heidegger, our first pack, and telling her, I was like, God, we'd have to sell like 8,500 of these to make it go. I don't know if we can do that. So mm-hmm. I did some metrics, and that's where I looked at like 10 products. If we had 10 products that were selling well, it should be able to at least give us a livable income. And again, it was about 14, or it was 14 when I quit, and we didn't make very much money at all that year, but we at least had a cash flow positive balance sheet. And it was that at that point where I realized if I quit my day job and do this full time, I think that I can make a better go of it, and we can get more products, better products, all the way around. It was going to be a significant improvement to our business. And then, yeah, it's been super, super busy, and it's worked out really well.
So, and is it you that comes up with the designs for all these, or do you have a team of in-house sort of ideas people, or is it your people who use your product that send you in the ideas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mix of things. No, we don't have an in-house design team, unless you count me, I guess. But, I listen a lot to customer feedback. We have thousands of reviews on our website, and I review every single review. I've never not read one. And I take a lot from that. So, it's like, I'm 5'10", 178 pounds. So I'm kind of the average male. So it's pretty easy to use my body as kind of that average test zone. It's females are the trick, and enlarged chested guys, triathletes with really large lats, there's from swimming. So it's really that feedback that's really helped to dial in these little subtle tweaks that we've done over the years that I take note. And then of course we get requests like, hey, can you make it in pink? Or can you make a pack like this? And can you do this? And so I have a huge design list that I constantly am modifying with different tweaks. And of course, I do test our products personally all day long. And I get about 5 workouts a week in. And when I'm out running or riding, I think about all the time, how can I make it better? And notes.
I like the bit on your website, which is the OM Lab, which talks about the products you've got and the innovations of them and what they were for and what you're currently working on. I like, that's interesting.
Yeah, I need to update that. I've been slacking on that. Yeah, we got a lot of new fun stuff in the development that I haven't even put on there. But it's always a balance act. In the beginning, the lab I posted a lot more. But as we've gotten older, I just had to be careful because if I post something there, it could invalidate a patent. So before I file a patent,
of course.
So I've slacked a little, but there's it's never ending, and I like to give little teasers up there where I can.
Well, it currently looks like you've been doing nothing since May last year, Josh. So you need to pick up your game.
I know. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because honestly, I forgot. That is the hard part. As you grow, it's easier in the beginning when you're not busy, and then all of a sudden you get really, really busy, and it's like, this isn't easy to keep up with anymore.
So you go from working in mainstream corporate life, selling medical equipment, to jacking it all in, starting up this what I call a lifestyle business based mm-hmm. around your hobbies. And have you managed to, in the 6 years as you've grown, have you managed to maintain this sort of philosophy of it being a lifestyle business? Or is it now just like running any other business for you?
No, it's 100%. It's still a lifestyle. I mean, a bad day here is still better than my best day in my previous careers. We make products that make people happy, so it's, I can't complain about that. And I mean, yesterday I went out for about an hour and 40 minute run, and then testing out a new pack. And then I took my daughter out on a bike ride last night, testing a different pack that I've been messing with. And we were just goofing around, of course, but I get to do that by for work. I mean, it's perfect. So don't get me wrong. There's a lot of it's stressful because, like, we're at a point right now, we're just so busy. We're having a little bit of a hard time keeping up with orders, which is kind of a funny thing to say. I didn't think I'd ever have a problem with that. But we definitely have some of that corporate side where, you're working 7 days a week to keep up sometimes. But again, you can't really complain because I still get to work out during the day on a weekday just because I'm testing a new product. So it's not really, you don't really feel like you're working near as much.
No, and I mean, I get that, in my job, I get to go to Hawaii every year for the Ironman World Championships. I used to be the UK distributor for CompuTrainer, and I used to go out there and work with them, and it was work. We'd be on the booth from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m, which isn't the nicest thing to do when it's 35 degrees and, you know, 80% humidity. But you're by the Pacific Ocean. I can think of worse places to work. And, you know, we got to hang out in the bar afterwards and watch the race firsthand. And, you know, my expenses were covered. And, you know, it beats working. Working like that beats working for a living. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm with you. It makes it fun.
I'm certainly not complaining because, I get to choose if I want to get up at 6 and do some work I can do. Tomorrow we're going to go to the Lake District, which is a 2-hour drive from us, and me and my partner Fiona, we're going to swim in what's called the Great North Swim. So she's doing the 10K, I'm doing the 5K. I'll be wearing my Blue 70 wetsuit, so I'm a brand ambassador for them in the same way you have brand ambassadors. And so I'll have a few photographs, and I'll meet some guys from Blue 70, and I'll hang out with some friends, and we'll watch some swimming, and we'll have something to eat by the lake, and the sun will be shining, and I'm like, this is all part of work. You know, everybody else is stuck in an office today, and this is all part of work. And even though I've been doing this for 20 years, I do have to pinch myself sometimes that I get to do this. But then equally, you know, like you did, I took a risk and decided that I wanted to pursue that rather than the easy option of taking a salary, and I've made it work for me, but it hasn't been without its risk and it hasn't been without its stress. But life's what you make of it, and you've only got one shot. That's all very cliched, that, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's true. That's the way I look at it. I mean, as nerdy as it sounds, I'm 40 years old, or 41 next month, and I already am, I don't know if stressing is the right word, but I'm already discouraged that I only have so many years left on mountain biking. And I love mountain biking, and gravel biking has been this new thing. And I already look like, okay, you know, not that I'm even super competitive anymore. You know, it's fun. That's what I'm out there to do, is enjoy it. But of course we all want to do faster and stronger and place better. And I already look at it like, I only have maybe 10 years of really kicking it. And then I'm definitely focusing on age group, you know, things. But you know, at the same time, I still remember getting passed by a dude that was 70, or passing a guy that was 78 in my first Ironman, and I passed him mile 11 of the run. So he still beat me in the swim and the bike. And I just remember running past, you know, he had his age on his leg, and I remember running past him thinking, dang it, this dude is freaking my hero. Like, if I can do that, that would be amazing. So I don't know, but yeah, it's like I said, I already stress about these things, but yeah, got plenty of time.
I'm a few years ahead of you there, Josh. And I'm thinking, well, how long can I keep going doing this? Now, I did an interview with a guy who won his age group in Kona last year. He's called Simon Butterworth. He's from Boulder, and he's 73. And nice. So he's the, you know, and he's still doing it. And we stayed with him for the Training Peaks conference in Boulder. So got to see him hang out. He's a really cool guy. You know, he doesn't look like his age. He didn't act like his age, and he's a great athlete. And yeah. I think, well, so okay, I'm 54 now. So that gives me, you know, that gives me 18 years to do all this stuff. That'd be good. If I can still keep doing that stuff in my 70s, that would be excellent. But, you know, I'm not bothered about racing. I know plenty of people in their 70s that can't even walk up the stairs unaided. So if I could just swim, bike and run in 18 years time, I'd be doing great. If I can actually go along and enter a triathlon and just participate, I think I'd be quite happy by the time I get to 70.
Absolutely. No, I'm 100%. 100% with you. Even like Leadville 100 mountain bike last year, there were a lot of guys up there, 65, 70 years old on the podium. And I mean, you know, it's age group, but still, like, they crushed it. I mean, 10-hour freaking Leadville 100. I just remember looking at them thinking, dang, I don't know. I can't do 10-hour right now. And these guys are 70 years old, look like some sort of like Hercules. I mean, it's just fascinating. Age is only relative. So as long as all my body parts keep working.
That's the thing. You there is a turning point in your mid to late 40s, and the challenge then as you get into your 50s is, you know, in your 30s you're still trying to beat your times, in your 40s you're still trying to make gains, but maybe not by as much. Once you get into your 50s, you're trying to be as good as you were last year, so you're trying not to lose any time. when you get to your 60s, you're just trying to slow down, but slower than everybody else. And I guess when you're in your 70s, you're just trying to be the last man standing.
Yeah. Hey, you can go for all the dead freaking last awards at that point too. There's always a plus.
When I first started doing Ironman and triathlon, I thought that if I could keep going until I was in my 60s, you know, I'd be sure to win my age group. And now I was telling you about Lanzarote Ironman last week. The winner of the 65 to 69 category did 11:58. And that race there is probably, even for the pros, it's probably 45 minutes slower than most Ironman. So as you get further down the field and towards the sort of like the, you know, the end of the age groups, those guys are getting even slower. So 11:58 in your late 60s is just absolutely incredible. I don't think I've ever gone sub 12 on that course, and I'm half their age. So
I know. There are some genetic freaks out there, that's for sure. I admire it. It's amazing.
There are, so the idea of the last man standing thing's now out of my head, and I'm coming on to something else. So I'm onto this idea of being a high performance human now, which is somebody like yourself. You know, I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to be, you know, the sort of guy that meets all my friends. I'm trying to get enough sleep. I'm trying to have a good diet and be free of disease. And I'm trying to spin these plates and focus on just being the best human I can be, i.e. a high-performance human. Is that something you consider, you know? Do you focus on sleep and nutrition in order to help you keep performing well at work and in your athletic pursuits?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I have two little kids, and like I think the last three nights home here, my daughter's woke me up at least once, if not twice, in the middle of the night just for, I don't even know. She was thirsty last night at 2 in the morning. So I just laid down with her, and I slept in there with her the rest of the night. But it's it is tough because there's an enormous amount of work, just like a lot of people have. But, you know, it's an enormous amount of work. And like a lot of people, you know, keeping up with family life is a bit insane. And, you know, we are fortunate that we run our own business because my daughter, she rode her bike into a parked car 2 weeks ago and broke her arm in two places. So right the last day of school. So all of a sudden the summer camp she was going to be going to isn't happening. So she's been home she'll be home for 3 weeks before she can go to summer camp, which means that between my wife and I, we have to juggle the balance of work and basically in babysitting duty. And, you know, granted, yes, it's a great problem to have and it's amazing. We're fortunate to be able to do so, but it makes it almost impossible to keep up. I don't even know what time my wife went to bed last night. She was working really late. So, you know, it's tough. And I think most of us struggle with that, but yeah, I try to obviously eat healthy as possible. I definitely have hard cutoffs for when I go to bed, and I have just chalked it up to there aren't always going to be those perfect sleep nights, but as long as I'm laying there, I'm happy. And at least I'm not, I guess, working, you know, and only resting 4 hours, but at least I'm resting for seven or so. But yeah, it's tough, definitely tough, but I definitely try.
And, you know, you talked about doing the gravel racing there, you know, your competitive instincts. So you're obviously still training reasonably hard. What sort of volume of training do you manage to get on a, you know, over a few weeks period?
Yeah, I'm generally about 8 to 12 hours a week is what I get. So it's not as much as I should to be optimal, but honestly, I find it's just the sweet spot. I focus more on intensity and doing threshold stuff and tempo stuff and just cramming in a smarter workout rather than just going out and riding for 10 hours and just go running for 5 hours. So I you know, I am focused in all on ultra run, ultra bike, and it's working. So I don't know. I feel like I have buddies of mine that give me crap. They're like, dude, you have to run more than you do to be able to do these races. I'm like, I don't know, worked last year. So, you know, there's just only so much time in the day. I literally wish I had like 30 hours in a day. It'd make life so much better if I did, but I don't. So, you know, it is what it is.
Do you follow any specific diet? Yeah, I know a lot of the ultra runners, certainly in the UK, are low carb, high fat fans these days. Is that something you follow?
Nah, you know, I guess I'm a little bit of maybe a gypsy in that way, where I will ebb and flow, you know, kind of depending on maybe a podcast or something. But, you know, like last week we were talking about a ketogenic diet on a podcast, and I was just fascinated by it. And, you know, I've heard of people talking about it, but I haven't really researched it much. And honestly, that's something I would really like to play with. But it's something that I tried. Yeah, obviously, I try to keep carbs down. I try to keep sugars down. I really try to watch for salt and eat a balanced, healthy diet. That's really what I've always been about. But the whole keto side is fascinating, especially with the amount of carbs you're supposed to max in a day, where like you can get that in a can of soda. It's almost, I mean, it's, there's so many diets that I think it's hard to keep up with. And for me, it's just easier right now to focus on health and just like keep carbs in check, bad fats in check, sodium in check, and, you know, just cook healthy.
You and I, in our pre-chat, we were talking about brand ambassadors. It's a conversation I've had with a couple of our podcast guests recently, and you've got a different take on this whole role of brand ambassador, haven't you? How do you do that for Orange Mud?
So yeah, so we started off real small, but with the focus that you have to be a current user of our gear. I never had believed in the brand ambassador programs that just give away free gear and that's just what they do. Because to me, I don't want someone to come in and like be an ambassador for us that doesn't already use our gear, because that means they don't know our gear. And why would you want to be an ambassador for a brand that you don't know anything about? To me, that just seemed, it just was illogical. So, from the very beginning, that's been a rule and we've never deviated from that. You've always had to be a user, before we considered people to add to the program. And then the other side, you know, we look at the ambassador program as we want to have good people, and that's always been the focus. You know, you need to be a positive influencer that, you know, overall had seems to have, you know, good morals and just, you know, overall good person. And, you know, which seems kind of simple, but again, from what I've seen of many programs out there, it seems like it's just kind of like, cool, you want to wear our stuff, you're gonna take pictures and post it, great, we'll give it to you. We've never looked at it that way. We really have a process where we comb through every applicant, and we do review every single application. But we're very cautious to make sure that we add people that we believe are going to be a good fit for our team.
And you were telling me you started off with just a handful, and you're now several hundred ambassadors. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we're 337, I believe, right now.
Wow! And all in the States or worldwide?
Yeah, we're worldwide, all over the globe. We're probably in maybe 20, 30 countries represented.
Wow, it's funny. Until I got, you know, in contact with you, I'd not really heard of Orange Mud before. But you are based in the UK, aren't you? And I guess now that I'm aware of the name, I'm going to see it everywhere.
No, we're based in the US, but
But you do have a presence in the UK now, yeah?
We did. That was just as of February, I think. Basically, is when our UK distributor came on board, and orangemud.co.uk, I believe, is the website. But yeah, it's been really cool to expand over there, because we'd ship packs, but, you know, duties and customs is such a pain.
Yeah.
That, you know, it definitely limited things. But yeah, we've actually been having some really powerful growth in the UK, which has been really exciting. And yeah, it's been taking off.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing some of that kit in action. If I go to am I likely to see it more at triathlons or more at some of the Spartan and Tough Mudder events that are growing?
You know, so trail and ultra running is a huge base for us. Gravel biking as well, but triathlon too. You know, it's kind of those three. We definitely sell to the Spartan and Tough Mudder crowd too. We just find that there's a higher percentage of that crowd that's kind of like off the couch to race back to the couch. You know, it's kind of the moniker,
done,
I guess, for it. Yeah, one and done thing. But especially in that half Ironman, Ironman space, we do great, because, you know, it's really anybody that's going to be running at least an hour and a half, 2 hours. That's a big, big market of ours. Mm. And hence the Ironman, half Ironman, ultra runner. And then again, mountain bike side too, endurance mountain bike side.
Cool. So you mentioned that there was a UK website now. So if any of our listeners that are based in the UK, was it orangemud.co.uk?
Yeah, it's, I should know this, but I believe it is orangemud.co.uk.
And they can also, I'm looking at your orangemud.com. And I tell you, if you go to Josh's website here, the front page is just full. Some funky pictures on the top, people mountain biking and running, but there's some amazing stuff. Some of these ultra running vests that I've seen, they're sort of equipment vests that you sort of like a wearable kit holder, if you like.
Yep.
Well, we've got standard hydration packs, we've got backpacks, we've got some nice Polartec gear, the normal holdalls, and then some sort of standard kit, really. beanies and buffs and water bottles and that sort of stuff. So you've got a whole range of things there, Josh, that will take the eye of the triathletes. They're like magpies triathletes. They love nice looking shiny stuff.
Sure.
But then if you go to Josh's website also, and this isn't supposed to be a sales pitch for Josh, but as well as the product section, he's got a really good section on training, particularly if you're interested in some of the more out there adventures like the Leadman events, ultra running, dirt bike training. There's some training programs on there. There's some really good articles from various guest posters on the blog. And Josh is also running a podcast as well. Is that called the Orange Mud Podcast, Josh?
Yeah, Orange Mud. We call it the Adventure Channel.
Okay. Yeah. So there's some interesting guests on there as well. So if you're a listener that's dabbling with ultra running or adventure racing or some of those sort of offshoots from endurance triathlon, if you like, then you might find some very interesting stuff on Josh's site too. So Josh Sprague, CEO of Orange Mud, lifestyle business owner, adventure racer, thanks very much for being on the call. It's been really interesting and enjoyable chatting with you.
Thank you much, man. I appreciate it.
Okay. Best wishes to you, Josh. Listeners, thanks once again for joining us. We do appreciate you choosing to listen to us each week. I know there's an awful lot of podcasts you could choose to listen to, and I'm sure you do, just as long as you put us at the top of your list every week. If you love this show, please do go to iTunes or Podbean and follow us so you get it automatically downloaded onto your phone. But until the next episode, thanks for listening. Enjoy your week, and we'll be back soon with some more great guests. Bye for now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon, 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.